thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Hi, Larry Mueller here. We're going to start the show today by talking with you about adoption and a lot of aspects relating to adoption. I think there's my numbers, the ones I saw, there's about 1.5 million children in the U.S. right now who have been adopted. So we'll look at what the experience is like for them and for their families, and certainly talk with our guests and get your input as well as we move along today. Our guests are Robin Fox, first the interim dean of the College of Education and Professional Studies at the University of Wisconsin-Whitewater. Robin, welcome. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you, Larry, for having us.
Robin's also editor of the book Adoption Matters: Teacher Educators Share Their Stories and Strategies for Adoption Inclusive Curriculum and Pedagogy. With us as well, Tracy Scher. Tracy, hello. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, Larry. Thank you for having us. It's an honor.
Tracy's a professor of psychology at UW-Whitewater and a contributor to Robin's the book that Robin edited. So we'll talk with them about the adoption experience. Certainly look forward to comments that you might have. Maybe you have had the experience of adopting, or maybe you were adopted. And I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Robin, let's start with you. What caused you to focus on adoption?
Sure. Thank you. And again, thank you for having us, Larry. Mm-hmm. It's really an honor. At the time, my partner and I were trying to form a family, and adoption wasn't the first avenue that we looked at.
Mm-hmm.
But when we decided to adopt, to form our family, I started to talk to people at work. At the time, I was, I believe, an associate professor in the College of Education and Professional Studies. My background is early childhood, so at the time, I was teaching courses about working with families, which is interesting and a story in and of itself, how little time I gave to adoption. When I started to talk to people in my department, I realized that there were a number of people who had chosen adoption as their way to form their forever family. And then I started branching out and talking to people outside of my department, but within the college, and then after that, outside of the college, but within the university at UW-Whitewater, and realized that there were a lot of us and that we all had a story to tell. The story was about adoption, but every one of the stories was different.
Yeah.
And so that's what really started me thinking about this. And then when we actually had our children and the children started to go to school, I realized that there were some things that maybe teachers and schools could learn about adoption to be more adoption friendly. And I gathered together 14 brilliant people. Actually, more than that. I asked more than that. There are more people at UW-Whitewater who have adopted but didn't feel ready to write yet. Mm-hmm. So there might be a number two coming.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think we started to talk, and we all had a story to tell, and we wanted to tell those stories. And we really wanted to help teachers to be more adoption friendly, and school psychologists and counselors.
And Robin, you were one of the people who decided to write a chapter for the book. I'm sorry, Tracy.
That's okay.
Excuse me.
That's okay. Yes, Robin requested that I contribute, and I have to say that it was one of the harder chapters that I've ever written. I kept putting it off and procrastinating about it, trying to formulate what kind of a message I wanted to send and what I wanted to share while still protecting my family's privacy, yet getting some key themes across that I think people and also educators, school psychologists, counselors in particular need to know about adoption in school settings.
Tell us about your experience with adoption.
Okay. I think it probably started when I was a county level social worker working with teenagers who had experienced abuse and neglect or delinquency issues. And I started to recognize, even in my early 20s, that I developed some very strong feelings of caring and, in some cases, love for the children that were on my caseload. And so that opened me to the idea that children that I would one day parent didn't necessarily have to be my biological mm-hmm. children. So at the point that my career was pretty stable and I had hit the age of 30 and was ready to parent, parent. I was and still am a single parent and chose adoption as my first avenue of forming a family. And I have two children, a daughter who's about to turn 13, adopted from China, and a son about to turn 9 years old, adopted from Russia.
And was the experience, back to you, Robin, for a minute, the experience of that, and now you taught it, and you made just a quick mention of things that you hadn't really considered as a teacher that once you had a child came to the fore.
Sure. So I'll give you a little bit of background about our family story, because I think it helps to put it into context. So we have two children. We have a daughter who is 14 and was adopted from Guatemala, and we have an 11-year-old who was a domestic adoption here in Wisconsin. Additionally, so our children are racially different than myself and my partner, and my partner is a woman. So what we have is we have adoption, race, two-mom family. So we have a lot of different things. Multiple identities, and I think before we had our children, I thought that probably the idea of being part of a two-mom family would be the most pressing issues or most concerning issues. And really, I think what I'm finding is like that is less of a concern because we've been able to put into place all of the legal precautions that we can, and now my then partner, now wife, and I are able to get married. And so there's that protection. But adoption and race is significant. And when I was teaching my class on working with families in a diverse society, and I spent half an hour talking about adoption, I never thought about the multiple identities that people bring into families formed through adoption. And so we spend in my family a lot of time talking about issues related to race and to adoption, some about being two-mom family. But I think I just didn't understand how deep adoption issues can be for some children, and for other children they're not. I thought that adoption was a one-size-fits-all kind of story.
Yeah.
And that's changed.
Mary Ann had a question for. By the way, you can join in with your own experiences to share or your own questions. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. Or you can email us at ideas@WPR.org, ideas@WPR.org. Mary Ann did email to say she has a good friend who is adopting. What should she know before she talks to her friend about her adopted child? And you go into some detail. In some ways, in your writing, in your book.
Well, I think that language is something that we focus a lot on in the book and also have a lot of discussions about as relates to interacting with each other personally and also professionally. When I talk with my graduate students who are preparing to be future school psychologists, how you refer to children who are adopted or families who have been formed by adoption is really important. And so I think in the case of a friend adopting, being careful about your language while also feeling free to be supportive is important. So treating that friend and their soon-to-be child as you would another friend who is about to give birth or parent a child. I don't want to fault anyone of my friends or family members, but there was so much up in the air during my adoption processes that I never had a baby shower, for example, for my children. And I regret that, or that's sad to me. So I think to the extent you can do some of the things we typically do to support parents who are about to adopt children, that's important. We did have parties after the children got home, however, so we made up for it.
Robin, your dad.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, what Tracy's saying. Thinking of it as any other family waiting for a child to be born. For us, the experience was a little bit different. We were both at the time working at the university at Whitewater, and I have to say we have received unbelievable support through the university for both the writing of the chapters in this book, for family leave when our children came home. But one thing that happened that I hadn't anticipated is that we had so many people who cared so deeply and wanted to know and wanted to be supportive that when my partner and I went to work every day, every single day, it was the question, have you heard anything yet? Did you get an email from the adoption agency? What's going on? And so I think it's you need to kind of temper that, right? We need to be interested and supportive in the way we would of a child who's going to be born. Mm-hmm. But also thinking like there are some additional stresses that go along with the adoption process. The wait is nothing short of excruciating. So our first child, we knew about her the day after she was born, and we weren't able to bring her home until she was 9 months old. And so it's just important to kind of get the whole story and then think about, as your caller wants to know, what do I do to support? Just think about what would be best in that situation.
What about the language you know, when you're talking to someone, maybe you have adopted someone and, all right, I have, there's, you could say I have an adopted child, but you prefer, and I really liked the preference that you have written about and talked about in your book, which really made a lot of sense to me, mm-hmm. which is?
Well, again, every story is different. And so my preference and our family's preference is that I have two children, period.
Mm-hmm.
Happens to be that they were adopted. And I use the past tense because I need our children to know that adoption is a process that has a beginning, a middle, and an end. And once a child is adopted, that's the end of
that
process.
That's the end of it, yeah.
For one of our authors in the book, who was adopted, she prefers to say that she is adopted because she believes the process is ongoing. Understanding everything around adoption is ongoing. And so, again, I think it's important to ask people what they prefer. But in our family, we very much prefer the past tense,
mm-hmm.
while not forgetting all of the things that go into being a child who was adopted.
Yeah. Marta in Milwaukee called to say she's adopted two children. She's concerned that there are children in the U.S. who need adopting, but people often go to other countries to adopt, and wondered if you'd comment on that. There are certainly children in the U.S. who need the help.
I think parents have a variety of reasons, some of which are very personal, for why they pursue one form of adoption versus another. For me, it had to do with having worked in the child welfare system and knowing some of the challenges in the United States related to adopting children from that system. I also, frankly, at the time, didn't believe that domestically anyone was going to select a single mother to parent their child. And so for a variety of reasons, including the one-child policy that largely affected female babies at the time, as well as children with disabilities.
Yeah.
I was called to China for my first child.
Yeah, that makes sense. Robin, anything
sure.
to add?
I would just simply add that if all states were open to parents who identify as LGBT to foster, that we could probably almost eliminate the number of children in foster care right now.
Talking today with Robin Fox and Tracy Scher. Robin is interim dean of the College of Education and Professional Studies at UW-Whitewater. Tracy is professor of psychology at UW-Whitewater and a contributor to the book that Robin edited. It's called Adoption Matters. Teacher educators share their stories and strategies for adoption inclusive curriculum and pedagogy. You can join in. I hope if you've had an experience with adoption or questions about adoption, not only the process of, but what comes after is a lot of what we're talking about here, too. Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas at WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our producer today, Nigel O'Shea, our engineer, and you are listening to the Ideas Network. Taking a look at the adoption experience today with a couple of experts from the University of Wisconsin-Whitewater, Robin Fox and Tracy Scher. Thanks so much for joining in today, and I hope you'll join in with your own questions or comments. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Getting lots of emails and look forward to your calls as well. What's the adoption experience been like for you? What would you like to know about supporting children who were adopted by their families? Love to hear from you. And let's take an email from Jeremy in northern Wisconsin. He wonders why adoption is so, as the way he wrote it out, expensive. He and his wife have thought about it, but can't afford the cost to adopt. Aren't there a lot of kids in need of good families? And is this why your guests adopted abroad? So that's sort of an additional thing there.
Well, I can say that adopting abroad did not solve that problem.
No. In fact, of the expense, yeah.
In some respects.
Probably more.
but one of the things I would say is that raising children from the point of birth forward costs money. And so it costs, both of my children were in orphanages prior to coming to me, and that costs money to care for children in orphanages. There are a lot of procedures that go through finalizing and legalizing adoptions, and those professionals need to be paid accordingly as well. There are situations of foster care to adoption processes in the United States that are relatively inexpensive. In addition, there are nonprofit agencies that are available to support potential adoptive families with assistance grants. And I don't know if I'm allowed to plug any of those,
sure.
But one that has been particularly amazing is helpusadopt.org.
Helpusadopt.org.
Correct. And Whitney and I, my daughter and I, were the recipient of one of their first grant rounds to finish bringing Whitney home. And it was a substantial amount of money. And this couple who formed Help Us Adopt formed it after their struggles with infertility and knowing how much adoption cost them and wanting to help other people become families. And one of the things I particularly appreciate about Help Us Adopt is that they're non-discriminatory.
Mm-hmm.
I am a white, cisgender, straight woman, and I experienced a level of discrimination in the adoption world in that I am of Jewish faith, and there was much more money available to support Christian heterosexual couples who wanted to adopt than I was able to access. And Help Us Adopt supports all sorts of family structures and all types of adoption situations.
We have Linda in West Allis with a comment for us. Linda, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hello.
Hi. Can you talk about your experience?
So my daughter conceived a child, and they chose the biological father who was 16 and my husband or my daughter who was 17, to put the child up for adoption. But we found a couple who had never conceived a child. They had been married 11 years and were looking to adopt. And my daughter, like I said, they chose this couple. We have an open adoption policy with them. Our granddaughter is now 8.5, and 8.5 years ago, there weren't open adoptions in Wisconsin. And so the adoption agency that we went through had a contract that the teenagers and the adoptive parents signed with the understanding that this was the open adoption. And as I'm saying, we still get to see her. They actually live in Colorado now, but we have an app on our phones called WhatsApp, and we're, you know, in constant communication with them, even though we don't get to see her a whole lot because they live in Colorado.
Yeah. Robin, you want to comment?
Sure. Well, thank you, Linda, for sharing your story. So I think it's important for callers to know that many of the adoptions, domestic adoptions here in Wisconsin now are open adoptions. When we adopted our daughter 11 years ago, it was an open adoption. And what that means is that most often the birth family chooses the forever family. And then from that point forward, it's really dependent on both families to decide how much contact they want. It sounds like Linda and her family have a really great understanding and relationship with the openness, but that doesn't always happen for a variety of reasons. And we do know that the earlier children know that they were adopted, the better they can, the better for their own development. For years and years, we used to keep adoption a secret. And sometimes people wouldn't find out until they were maybe adults or their forever parents pass away and they find paperwork. And we know that that's not what's best for kids. And so in the state of Wisconsin in particular, almost every domestic adoption now is open. When we adopted our second daughter, we signed paperwork that said that we would have discussions with her from the moment we had her and forever about her adoption.
Linda, thank you again for calling. I appreciate it very much. Let's take another call. Jim in Minocqua, turn to you now. Jim, thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. What's on your mind today?
Well, adoptions, as we hear from each person that calls, and I'm included in that group, we have these stories that go behind our process. But we adopted because a year before we were going to be married, my wife lost her uterus. Thank God it was benign. But we then got on that trail, got on the Lutheran Social Services groups registration and the Catholic Social Service, kind of playing our odds. And then we kind of we were teaching. I was teaching and she was working in the Northwestern near La Crosse. And then we moved to Madison area, and I taught in a different school, and she got a job in a different company. And they lost our name when we transferred our name to Madison. They lost it. So we stayed without child for 7 years, and finally I had a sister who said, well, you know, you should call them. We called them. They hadn't lost our name. Immediately we were in an adoption group. But the end of the story, we got our children at 5 weeks old, both of them. The second child, we forgot about Catholic Social Services, the Lutheran Social Service Agency, and I got a call when I was almost 40. Oh my God, we have another child for you, and we had completely forgot to. We weren't thinking, I guess. And so we got another son, a son after a daughter, almost 7 years later. And our son or our daughter, who is now 6.5 years old, actually went to the open adoption process and saw her new brother being handed over by the birth mother to us at the Catholic Social Services Agency, which I thought was fantastic for my daughter because we'd always discussed that. Going further, you know, now they're adults. We encouraged my daughter when she married by Justice Peace, her husband was an officer in the Air Force. We said, you should contact your birth parents. I think it would be very important because I felt very engaged with them. We shared letters along with my wife, and we knew a lot about them and felt it would be a healthy thing. And in fact, today we're close friends with her birth parents.
And
we've vacationed with them. We've gone to Ireland with them. With my daughter, now I have a granddaughter. But it's a wonderful outcome to a long story. And my son, on the other hand, it was a second child for a daughter, a young woman who had given up the first child because she doesn't have the ability to raise that child. And so I did. Told my son, who is again 7 years younger, I said, now I would say that it's very fortunate that it happened the way it did with Andrea. It turned out great, but and we'll support you, Ben is his name, if you pursue that too. But you have to understand it may not always work as well as it has for your sister, Andrea. So,
yeah,
but it's worked very well for us, and the children are well adjusted. Ben had some health issues from birth. Andrea has a doctorate in physical therapy, and they're all very well educated and living wonderful lives.
Well, Jim, thank you so much for calling. Tracy, let's get a comment from you on what Jim had to say in his experience.
I think what Jim was touching on is the complexity of and diversity of the different kinds of relationships between parents and children in forever families and birth families. In our own family, of course, my part of the family was formed by adoption, and we also have a birth mother who is a cousin of mine, and mm-hmm. we were graced over the past couple of years to have her reconnect with her now adult son. And so my children have been part of that process as well. And for them, my children, unfortunately, it's not going to be a possibility to have relationships with their birth families due to circumstances surrounding their birth and yeah. adoption. We've searched in their home countries and made efforts to have that happen, and it just hasn't panned out. So I think bringing it again back to schools and educators, I think it's important to recognize that adoption is not a one-size-fits-all, and there may be some very interesting yet complex relationships happening both with biological or birth families as well as in their permanent or forever families.
Yeah. Jim, thank you again for calling. Sort of to go along with the conversation that we've been having here, Jen and Madison emailed to ask if you could talk more about the importance of highlighting the birth mother and her experience in talking to adopted children about adoption. In her family, their children's first mothers are quite important.
Mm-hmm. So I really appreciate Jen's comments, and I like the term first mother. I think that's another term that people use and are comfortable with. I can only speak of my own experience and say that my children's birth mothers are on my mind probably daily. Mm-hmm. I wish for them health and happiness and long lives, and I am forever cognizant that the choice that they made must have been the most difficult choice.
Sure.
And that choice resulted in me having unbelievable joy. And so I am reminded of that, my wife and I make a point of talking to our children about their birth families, sharing with them the information that we know, and then giving them the freedom to share what they want to share. We don't share the details about the birth families because it's not really our story to tell. And so if there are birth families who are out there listening, I hope that they understand that they are probably forever in their birth children's thoughts, but also in the thoughts of the parents in the permanent families. Again, we understand that by making an adoption plan, we were given great joy, and
yeah.
And we don't forget them.
You know, school's out pretty much across the state, and there I'm betting that there are teachers listening today, and I feel it's important that educators have some special training about adoption. What kinds of things do you want to talk about in that area? Maybe start with you, Tracy.
Well, I think the primary thing, and perhaps the easiest thing in my mind, is to be aware of the different family structures as we've been discussing today. So often we go back to phrases we've rehearsed millions of times in school classrooms, you know, take this home to your mom and dad. And just recognizing that whether it's due to adoption or a different sort of family structure, not everyone's family has the same makeup. And again, that issue of language is really important to acknowledge the multiple kinds of family structures and how that looks for students.
You know, I was, you were pointing out, I think, in some of the writing that I was reading that, you know, just even on the forms you have to fill out, if instead of saying mom and dad both need to sign this or something, and have the family, you refer to them as family rather than as mom or dad or mom and dad. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think our family talks about forms a lot, the forms that we have to fill out and how we spend a lot of time scratching things off, adding things in. You know, when it relates to adoption, a form as simple as asking about medical issues, meaning that, of course, the child who is you're talking about has the parents who are filling out the form. You know, the same at like a doctor's office when they say, tell us about the medical history of the family. Well, we don't have that. And so being careful, schools being careful with that, asking questions about asking children to do things like bring in pictures, baby pictures. So around graduation time, that happens quite a bit, like bring in a baby picture. And for many children who were adopted, those pictures are available. But for some children who were adopted, especially those maybe through foster care, there was maybe no camera, no phone to take any pictures, or none were kept. And so I think what we have found with teachers that we've worked with and administrators that we've worked with, when we bring things to their attention, they are so open to making change. Yeah. So one of the things, the use of the term adopt for anything other than making forever families, we would prefer that schools not use that. So, you know, we have things like adopt a playground,
adopt a whale, or something.
Adopt a road, right. And so when we've talked to our children, we've talked to them about the very long process of adopting them and how it was them. We were adopting them. It took a lot of time and effort and persistence and tenacity. And so then when we say something in a classroom like, oh, our class is going to adopt a manatee, it negates our story. And so when we've brought that to the attention of teachers, they've been nothing short of thankful and have changed their language. And so I really
share is a better, you know,
share. We're going to take responsibility for, we're going to help support, we're going to, but
sponsor.
Adopt could. We want adopt to only be used for the making of forever families.
Yeah, support. Yeah, so we're going to support a whale.
Yes.
Instead of we're going to adopt a whale. And you do see that, mm-hmm. adopt, that term comes up all the time in all kinds of situations.
Yes.
Yeah, so I can see where it would be an issue for sure. What I just lost my train of thought here. Julie emailed to respond to the comment about adopting internationally. She has two domestically adopted children. They adopted transracially. They're white. Their children are black. She's learned that each family has its own story and has to find the right type of adoption for their family. She doesn't think that every family should adopt transracially. The children need to see themselves reflected in the people the parents interact with in a positive manner in order to help the child develop a positive racial identity. And transracial families stick out and people ask a lot of rude questions. So parents have to be prepared to deal with those types of questions. And if they aren't, they shouldn't be adopting transracially.
I think Julie makes an essential point, and Robin and I both have multicultural families related to race and ethnicity, and one of the things that I've been very purposeful about from the beginning is doing what I can to instill a sense of pride in birth country as well as current home country,
mm-hmm.
And we celebrate lots and lots of holidays from around the world in our household. But I also take my kids' lead. As my daughter enters middle school, identity, of course, is a big issue.
Yeah.
And it's up to them, I think, how much they want to and do identify with their birth cultures versus their home cultures, and how much we put that into our family structure and our family celebrations and our day-to-day life.
You know, what's been the reaction, by the way, to from educators to your book? Has it been good?
It has been good. One of the funniest things I think that has happened is that my daughter took it in and was reading it during their reading time in school in her fifth grade classroom. And she brought it in, but her very good friend had already read the whole book, a fifth grader, and had a lot of questions. And her family was excited that she had taken the time to read it. And she also knew a bunch of the children who the stories were about. And so I think that educators are reading it, but how cool that the children in our kids' lives are reading it.
Well, as I was reading through it, I thought, well, this is all right. So it's sort of aimed at educators, but anyone can certainly benefit from reading about these experiences that you wrote about and edited.
Mm-hmm. I think that was in part the point, was it's about teacher educators, and we're all in some way teacher educators or school psychologists or administrators, but we wrote it in a way that would be helpful for not just teachers, but also people who might be going through the adoption process and how they can best navigate schools. I think for many of us, too, it was an opportunity to tell our story and for it to be valued in the academy, right? So we at a university, we know that if something gets published, it's important. And and to have our university's support in doing this work and then getting it published about something that was extraordinarily personal is just very validating. And I think Tracy alluded to this initially, that this was hard to write. And I've been proud of the things that I've written, but nothing like this, because before we sent it off to be published, we had our older daughter read it to make sure I hadn't overshared. And I've had a lot of peer reviewers, but there was nothing like that review waiting for her. And when she got done, she said, "I think it's okay," which was a ringing endorsement.
Yeah, at that age.
Yes, as a teenager, yes.
Yeah, at a teenager, definitely. And the book is, the title of the book is Adoption Matters. Teacher educators share their stories and strategies for adoption, inclusive curriculum, and pedagogy. Robin Fox, the editor. Robin, thank you so much for being, and who's it published by?
It's published by Peter Lang.
Peter Lang, and should be able to get it online.
Yep.
Or order from your local bookstore. If you type your name in, it's going to come up.
It will, yes.
Yeah, for
thank
sure.
You.
Robin, thank you so much. And Tracy Scherer, thank you so much. It was great to have a chance to talk with you as well, and also to read your chapter.
Thank you. It was a pleasure. Book. Thank you so much.
Thank you both. Robin Fox, Interim Dean of the College of Education and Professional Studies at the UW-Whitewater. Editor of the book Adoption Matters, teacher educators share their stories and strategies for adoption, inclusive curriculum, and pedagogy. Tracy Scherer, professor of psychology at UW-Whitewater and a contributor to that book. And I've certainly learned an awful lot in a pretty short time. And, you know, you always think that, okay, I'm clued into things, but there were plenty of things for me to learn, and that may be the case for you as well when you get your hands in that book. So take a look. And thanks again to them, and certainly thank you for listening. We're going to continue on, and we're switching gears entirely. You know what? It must be close to the last Monday of the month, because we're going to be talking climate and weather next with our weather guy. Usually it's the weather guys, but today it's John Martin, one of our weather guys. Next on the Ideas Network, I'm Larry Mealy.